Tectorama episode 510, Tahiti Syndrome.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Where can I go where the Wi-Fi is clean and the toilets get good reception? Wait.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
That sounded like a line from Cheers.
I know, right?
Where can you go where the Wi-Fi is clean and the toilets are good reception? Where everybody knows your name.
It's like Technorama.
Technorama is filmed before a live studio audience. Welcome to Technorama. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This is the show with a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are coming back from a previous visit, no judgments here.
Yeah.
We appreciate
our past
it.
Work. We're moving forward.
I am Chuck Tomasi. Joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Man, I'm hot and muggy here. I'm in the middle of the southern summer.
It is in the middle of the Phoenix summer, so I got you beat on temperature, and the humidity is creeping up as we get into the monsoon season.
Do they get humidity out there?
Yes. We were up to 46% the other day.
Wow.
Well, hey, and it was also like 95 degrees, so it is starting to get muggy when you think about, hey, I could usually walk around in 112 and not break a sweat.
I saw this animated GIF, and this guy said he was in Arizona, and he threw water onto a manhole cover.
Yeah.
And it sizzled like he threw it in a frying pan or something. It went away.
Not quite, but close.
If it's 100, what was it, 124?
Yeah. Water boils at 212 Fahrenheit.
I don't know. Those manhole covers ought to get pretty hot.
Not up to 200 degrees.
next time you have one of those days, you go out and try it.
All right.
It'd be like when you're in Wisconsin, they say, hey,
and
it's really cold
and you throw the hot water up. Yes. And it turns into like instant steam. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I've done that.
So now you're doing the same thing, but in Arizona.
Yeah. Just throw a cup of water in the air. It turns to steam. What an idea.
Just like it does when it's freezing.
All right. Let us get started with the history thing. Since we don't have any feedback, I believe I forgot to post the question to Facebook. This past week,
it's a good question too.
We'll get back to that. But it shows that people who are listening on a podcast aren't necessarily responding in kind. But we'll get there. Let's do this.
All right, let's do it.
On this day in history, for July 19, 2017, this is the 200th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. I'm sorry, we were just talking about the number 200, and it threw me off. There are 165 days remaining in 2017. It was on this date, in 1817, that unsuccessful in his attempt to conquer the Kingdom of Hawaii for the Russian-American company, George Anton Schaefer is forced to admit defeat and leave Kauai.
That was kind of worded a little weird, wasn't it?
You never know how that algorithm comes out.
That's probably right. Also, on July 19th, 1843, Brunel's steamship, the SS Great... Brunel's? Brunel's steamship, the SS Great Britain, is launched, becoming the first ocean-going craft with an iron hull and screw propeller, becoming the largest vessel afloat in the world.
Wow. 1843. That's a modern ship, in my opinion.
Yeah.
July 19th, 1900, the first line of the Paris Metro opens for operation.
Also in this date, in 1963, Joe Walker flies the North American X-15, a record altitude of 106,010 meters, 347,800 feet for you Americans.
That's 10 times as high as your average commercial airliner flies.
Yeah, it was exceeding an altitude of 100 kilometers. This flight qualifies as a human space flight under the International Convention.
In 1963. How about that? Yes. It was 34 years ago today that the... Please move your cursor, Craig. Your name is over my writing. No, it's still over my writing. Put it somewhere else.
It is somewhere else.
Okay. It was 34 years ago today that the first three-dimensional reconstruction of a human head in a CT is published. It's hard moving around with this concurrent document editing thing.
And now we can 3D print it.
Happy birthday goes out in this day to Italian monk, missionary, and painter Giuseppe Castiglioni. He was a Jesuit painter born on this date in 1688.
Samuel Colt, American inventor and industrialist, was born on the same date in 1814.
Born July 19th, 1865, American physician Charles Horace Mayo. Think he had a sandwich or something.
Yeah, and some of my favorite work came from this guy. Max Fleischer, the animator, inventor, film director, was born on 134 years ago today. I remember specifically he did some of the Superman cartoons.
Very cool. Russian mathematician Alexander Kinchin. I get the Russian mathematician this week.
He likes to cook.
Born 123 years ago today also.
And Richard Arnaue, the American chemical engineer, was born 97 years ago today.
I gotta check my algorithm. That's three lines that both end, that all three of them end with X number of years ago today. It's not supposed to repeat.
And I see extra periods around here.
Well, that's a parsing issue that I get from the REST API, but we'll go on. Harold Camping, American Doomsday Prophet, was born on this same date in 1921.
American director, producer, writer Arthur Rankin Jr., born on this date in 1924.
Didn't he also do cartoons or something? Was he part of Rankin Bass? Like
I believe so.
With the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Yeah, and all the Christmas stuff.
Yep. Okay. Also turning 70 today is English musician and astrophysicist Brian May.
Father of IMAP protocol, Mark Crispin, is born 61 years ago today.
He'd be so proud of his child. It's all grown up.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure it's in wide use today.
Actor Anthony Edwards was born today in 1962.
1861. Also turning 47 today is American mathematician Bill Chin.
English actor and film producer Bumbercumsmanderbatch. Cabbage Patch.
Why does everybody mess his name up? Come on.
Benedict Cumberbatch was born today in 1976. Holy cat food, he's young.
Yeah, and also born today, also turning 35 today is an American actor, Jared Padalecki.
From Supernatural. He's 35. Yeah, he's the big Jolly Green Giant guy. Listener birthday today include, well, it's not today, coming up in the next week, July 23rd, Dave Perillo, from the formerly named Megapodzilla podcast. And Monty Gog's Art-O-Rama, and friend of the show and friend of many other shows, Matt Wallace, has a birthday on July 25th. Happy birthday.
Didn't he work on 60 Minutes?
That was Mike Wallace. Nice try. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to truckchat.com/wiki. We would love to give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And some people have their wives, their anniversaries, their bar mitzvahs.
Their dogs.
That's right. Don't go nuts. Okay, go nuts. That's what the show is all about. Happy birthday to all of them. And if it's your birthday and we didn't give you a shout out, happy birthday to you also. We want to wish you all the very best. That's it. That's the way it was on this day in history for July 19th, 2017. I believe the band is winding down. Wow, let's take them out.
Like a baton.
I can't play the baton.
You know what? When you did that, you know what I started thinking of? Remember, on this auspicious occasion.
You mean this
horn?
Auspicious occasion, let the horn of eternity cut a thunderous blast.
Craig still loves that one.
I love that. That's hilarious.
I think my favorite is still fried crack corn, and I don't care. Leela crack corn, I still don't care. Better crack corn, and he is great. Take that, you stupid corn.
That's right.
All right, we have a couple of news stories, which means it's time for some news.
Good news, everyone.
The first Bring images the news. Of Jupiter's great red spot reach Earth, and tubes of Preparation H are on their way.
We can't help.
This is from spaceflightnow.com. 2 days after NASA's Juno spacecraft streaked over Jupiter's great red spot, pictures of the solar system's largest, most powerful storm have been transmitted to Earth, giving eager scientists close-up views of the 10,000-mile-wide anticyclone, where 400-mile-per-hour winds are howling for have been howling for at least 187 years and possibly much longer. The solar-powered Juno reached the low point in its 53-day orbit around Jupiter at 9:55 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Monday. That would be this past Monday, passing within 2,200 miles of the planet's cloud tops. 11.5 minutes later, it made its first pass directly over the Great Red Spot at an altitude of about 5,600 miles and a velocity of a cool 130,000 miles per hour. The spacecraft's camera, not so creatively named JunoCam, and its eight other science instruments were all operating at close approach on the first raw, unprocessed pictures were posted on the camera website early Wednesday.
Selfie!
Additional processing is expected to bring out much more detail in the images that, when occupied with data from Juno's other instruments, will shed more light on the nature of the storm and presumably help answer questions that have baffled scientists for nearly two centuries, if not longer. Despite long-term observations of groundbreaking telescopes and a variety of spacecraft, including the Hubble Space Telescope, the Voyager probes, and the Galileo orbiter, scientists still do not understand what powers the storm. How deep it extends below Jupiter's cloud tops, how long it has swirled, or even the sources of its reddish hue.
How many questions do we have about Jupiter?
What is the average speed of a laden swallow?
Blue, no green. I'm sorry. That's
And what is the capital of Assyria? I actually changed something in the podcasting for dummies to say that now.
Jaleppo.
No, it's not Jaleppo. You're going to have to look. I did. But now I won't be fooled by the old man from scene 24 at the Bridge of Death.
Right.
We just strayed off topic a little bit. Apologies. This is some pretty cool stuff. Juno was launched in 2011 and made a close Earth flyby in 2013 to get a gravitational assist to go whoosh, and 5 years later, it is now Jupiter.
Is that how they technically describe it at NASA? Yes. And then we're going to go
You have to put in the Star Trek Enterprise sound as it goes by. I need to find my Enterprise. It's around here somewhere. Lots of things.
You haven't found it?
It's around. I found the box. I did a lot of cleaning.
Well, you're cleaning.
I do know where it is. It's in a box back there behind the Dalek.
Okay. Right where you keep your Star Trek
stuff. We are probably not. Well, there's a lightsaber in the same box. We are probably not your first news source for this. If you have been keeping up, you've probably heard this. Maybe if you're watching live on Sunday night and we do this podcast, this might be the first you heard of it. But I suspect...
The only reason I threw this in here is because I didn't think we were doing ourselves a favor if we didn't mention it.
All right, then we will mention it quick in case you were sleeping under a rock for the last few days.
Yeah.
As of Sunday, July 17th, 2017, we have a new doctor announced. Doctor Who doctor. Would you care to read this, Craig?
Sure. So Peter Capaldi, the 12th doctor, who had said... he wanted to see a woman replace him in the TARDIS, and so did the former Doctor Who's Billy Piper and Kieran Gillen. I'd say they're biased, but I'm just kidding.
Hey.
And today it's official. The 13th incarnation of Doctor Who will be portrayed by an actress, specifically Jodie Whittaker, who American viewers may remember from her performance as a CIA officer and as Sandra Grimes in the 2014 miniseries The Assets, which I don't remember that. But I have seen her before, and I'm interested in it. I think this is a good turn a lot of people are going, hey, it's great to be progressive and all that. And I don't want to say that they're being progressive. I want to think that she's the right person for the job. You know, that's it. Not.
I'm curious to see where it takes the show. It's got a whole new level of
perspective,
creativity. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, look at what happened when they brought in, River Song, and mm-hmm. and she was not quite she was the doctor's spouse, but it was, I don't know. I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen haters online already.
What?
I've seen people saying yes, and I've seen people going, hey, you know, they're being progressive, maybe even a little bit. I it's not necessarily progressive. I want to see a female succeed in there as something new, because we have, and honestly, I mean, I love watching Doctor Who, but it's kind of the same. They need something to get out of the thing. And I'm hoping that she's the right actress to do this, because if she does, it could be something special.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah.
So there you go. Stay tuned for more details. It will be an interesting season with the 13th Doctor. I missed something. And I'll admit it, I haven't watched a whole lot of the Peter Capaldi series. I was going to mainline them, and I just kind of got mm-hmm. behind. Wasn't there a limit on the number of times a doctor could regenerate?
Yes, but that, I'm trying to think, that's kind of been changed up.
This is where we need Ben and Keith really bad.
Yeah, right. Well, right before Peter Capaldi came around, there was the whole, I'm having trouble articulating it, but yes, they've worked around that. So okay. Now there can be a bunch more. He's got his regenerations have been regenerated in themselves.
His counter's been reset.
Yeah, I'm sure
his SD card's been reformatted.
I know somebody can articulate this a lot better than I can. Okay. But basically, the counter's been reset, so there can be more than just the 12.
We'll get them back online when they come back from break.
Yeah, they can explain it.
They can explain it.
They can mansplain it to us.
Let's take a real quick break. We'll be back with some hacks and strange stories and many other fun things to talk about right after this quick break.
Well, it's summertime, and you know what that means? That means it's just about time for the dog days of podcasting. The 30-day challenge, where podcasters get together and record quick and dirty, fun little podcasts that they throw together onto a master feed, and you get to join in on the fun. There's two ways you can join in. You can, and you can do both. You can listen to every single episode that comes out and get a smorgasbord of different topics brought to your ears every single day. Or you can even grab a microphone or your phone and create and record your own podcast every day and join in the fun. If you've never done a podcast before, this is a great way to get your feet wet. If you're a veteran podcaster, this is a great way to spice up the podcasting and make it a little more fun and break yourself out of the habit. It's like a summer vacation. The only thing you really need is to have something to say. So why don't you do it? Grab a microphone or just grab the RSS feed and join us. Go to dogdaysofpodcasting.com and you will find all the information that you need to know to listen or to join us and podcast yourself.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong, Ensign Harry Kim from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Technorama with Chuck and Craig.
We got a lot of people that are hanging out and checking us out on Facebook Live. We'd love to see you there.
They're checking us out?
That's right. Us out?
Oh, hey, baby.
They haven't been checking us out for very long, but hey, thanks. Hang out with some nerd friends. In fact, Gary Lindros, friend of the show, has said that Technorama trumps Game of Thrones tonight.
Wow.
That's dedication.
Wow. Yeah.
Take that, Lannisters. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
No, wait. Lannisters never forgive a debt. No, Lannisters never. Lannisters always repay their debts. That's it.
Who? Maybe I should watch Game of Thrones.
Oh, Craig.
I haven't watched any. I don't know.
You're missing out.
Well, wow. I did go out online when everybody was freaking out about the Red Wedding, and I had to go figure out. I was like,
you can't just jump in and watch that. Then it has no meaning.
Well, it looked pretty bad. But I had to jump out. I went to YouTube or something and found a clip and went, oh.
And I don't understand how they're freaking out when most of the people read the book anyway and knew it was coming.
Did you read the book?
I read book number one and about half of the second one.
Really?
I was doing them on audio. They kind of got a little dry.
Oh.
They're long.
Yeah.
All right. We have Hacks and Strange Stories. I like this one, and I saw this when I was scanning the headlines and hoped you'd throw this one in, because it brought some interest in my opinion as well. A scrap dealer finds an Apollo-era NASA computer in a dead engineer's basement. Now, let me explain that a little bit more. A pair of Apollo-era NASA computers, a pair of these. You know how big the computers were back in the 60s?
Yes.
Quite large. Well, the computer, two of these, and hundreds of mysterious tape reels have been discovered in a deceased engineer's basement in Pittsburgh. Most of the tapes are unmarked, but the majority of the rest appear to be instrumental reels for Pioneer 10 and Pioneer 11, NASA's flyby missions to Jupiter and Saturn. At some point in the early 1970s, an IBM engineer working for NASA at the height of the space race took home the computers. This is sick as a whole new meaning to dumpster diving.
No kidding.
And the mysterious tape reels also went with them. A scrap dealer invited to clean out the deceased electronic-filled basement discovered the computers. The devices were clearly labeled NASA property. So the dealer called NASA to report the find. Please tell NASA these items were not stolen, the engineer's heir told the scrap dealer, according to the report. Quote, they belonged to IBM Allegheny Center, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. During the 1968 to 1972 timeframe, IBM was getting rid of the items, so the engineer's name,
who shall not be named
here, asked if he could have them and was told he could have them. What are you going to do with those four closet-sized computers when you're done with this project?
Well, I was going to say it's kind of impressive to move those into a basement. I can imagine.
Well, there are some comments that say these are so large that it says NASA told the family that the deceased that it was not in the junk removal business. Ars Technica reports, adding the two computers are so heavy that a crane was likely used to move the machines. A NASA archivist concluded there's no evidence of the tapes contained anything of historic significance. Alrighty then. So if they're in the basement,
because the guy formatted them as soon as he brought them home.
They're in the basement, and you needed a crane. Guess how you're going to get them out?
Yeah. Well, when I think of a crane, like to move a computer, like that. I mean, not like overhead. I would think one of those little.
I'm thinking overhead, like the same way they got the AC unit on my roof last summer.
No, I'm talking about. I think it should be. It's probably more of a. It's probably not much bigger than a person, you know, so you can move them around almost like not a forklift.
I'm thinking to get them out, they're going to have to be dismantled.
Well, yeah, that's one way to do it. I mean, there's a bunch of different types of cranes.
Yeah, cranes. Basement cranes, sandhill cranes, hooping cranes.
Have you ever seen the large beam ones that are in like a warehouse? You know, it's a big beam.
Yes, the overhead track cranes. All right. Shout out to the chat room. We did our shout out to the chat
room. That's all I got to say about cranes.
Yeah. We didn't have much to go. Scott Tyler is watching. He's not living with us this week, so he can't be on the show.
Living with you this week?
He's temporarily in his condo. He's between the Binary Studio and his end home destination, but he will be making a short stop by between there again one more time. He's not homeless. His wife is driving out from Wisconsin, so he wants to meet her, but not in our house, thank goodness.
Oh, I thought they were both there.
No, they have not been here. She is starting her job in a few days.
Oh, okay.
But all she needed to finish the closing out of the house out there.
Oh, well, we can talk about that offline.
Okay.
Hey, everybody, guess what? Let's talk about Scott's business.
Maybe that's our Patreon show.
Let's talk about what's happening with Scott.
Don Schlentz was in the chat room for a while. This is the man who taught me my first college computer course.
Oh, look, he's still checking up on you.
I have some punch cards around here somewhere, too.
I think he's hoping you'll make something of yourself one day.
Hasn't happened yet.
That's right.
What a disappointment watching Technorama.
Yeah, I'm out. Click.
This is why I stopped teaching.
Right. Whoa, my duct tape or my electric tape's not holding anymore.
Uh-oh. Don't work on a microphone while it's live, man. That's terribly noisy.
It was either that or it was going to fall over. So
that's one of those sounds that go on the
Captain, I'm trying to save the bridge.
Conference call bingo. Yeah. Someone manhandling their microphone.
I posted that thing up. That was I know it was on Reddit before and I shared it. It was a board, and Chuck kind of ran with the idea, but it was a board. It was like almost like a pool board. Okay, what are we going to get today? And it was like a conference call bingo, and it had a bunch of squares.
5x5 grid, and in there were the common phrases you often hear on a conference call. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute, which is the legitimate lie that says I wasn't paying attention. Or, could you repeat that? I didn't hear it. What was some other ones? Who just joined?
Yeah. Was that a child or an animal noise?
Both.
Can everyone go on mute? Can everyone see my screen? That's another good one.
I'm sorry. It's still loading. You're still sharing. There's a lot of them that we all laughed at. I threw in another one that said, let's give everyone another minute or two to join. It's 3 minutes after. Why are we're punishing the punctual, as they like to say in education services at our company. Okay, enough about that sidetrack down to conference call bingo.
Hey, Chuck, hold on. I have another call.
I have a hard stop on this podcast at 7:30.
Right.
Thank you to our patrons. Let's play the patron music. Where is it? There it is.
Wait. We got one more story.
There was nothing in Remember When. Did we skip a story?
Yeah, the toilet one.
Oh, do we have to do the toilet one?
Yes.
All right. We have to do this one.
It's time for the toilet humor.
Okay. Which wouldn't be a Technorama show without this. 22,000 people agreed to clean toilets for Wi-Fi because they didn't read the terms. Outstanding. Right. Tim Berners-Lee, and any article that starts with Tim Berners-Lee has to be credible, right?
I wonder how many stories start with his name.
Tim Berners-Lee, the father of the World Wide Web, listed his top worries for the future of his creation earlier this year. One of his biggest concerns is the increasingly dense terms of service agreements that companies ask users to sign. Now, a public Wi-Fi company has demonstrated just how dangerous these complicated agreements can be by inserting absurd conditions that thousands of people unwittingly agreed to.
Right.
Purple is not just a color. It's a Manchester-based company that specializes in running Wi-Fi hotspots for brands like Legoland, Outback Steakhouse, and Pizza Express. Wasn't that in Toy Story?
Pizza Express? Oh, that was
Pizza Planet.
Yeah, Pizza Planet.
This week, the company came clean about its two-week experiment in which it inserted a, quote, community service clause into its terms of service agreement. More than 22,000 people signed up to perform 1,000 hours of menial labor for the chance to check in on their Facebook and maybe look up some directions. In a blog post on its site, a Purple spokesman explains that the agreement requires users to...
A Purple spokesman.
A Purple spokesman.
Well, he's not breathing.
He explains that the agreement requires users to do any of the following at Purple's discretion. Cleansing local parks of animal waste. Providing hugs to stray cats and dogs. Done. Manually relieving sewer blockages. Done. Cleaning portable lavatories at local festivals and events. Painting snail shells to brighten up their existence. Scraping chewing gum off the streets. There was also a prize offered for anyone who contacted the company and pointed out the clause. Only one person received a prize. It's unclear if Purple would even be legally allowed to enforce the clause, but it says it won't even try. This was simultaneous This was simultaneously a campaign to raise awareness about the necessity of reading the terms of service and a marketing stunt to announce that Purple is the first Wi-Fi provider to be compliant under the new General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR. The GDPR guidelines will become enforced on May 25th, 2018 for countries that are part of the European Union. Ooh, I guess Brexit can't come fast enough for some of us.
Right.
The new regulations are intended to simplify terms and conditions as well as provide more transparency for customers to understand how their personal data will be used. Here in the U.S., fancy consumer protections are anathema to freedom, and I cannot pronounce it. Anathema. I've never seen that word before. To freedom. And capitalism. So you might want to be careful.
You know, they said this was a campaign for awareness, to raise awareness about the necessity of reading the terms of service. And I hope it's not to put the burden on the consumer, because I think
too long.
Yeah, they're way too long. Who is going to read this garbage? I'm installing a piece of software. You know, I got to read
every
5 pages.
Every iOS update, every software update. I mean, apples are ridiculous. Some of, among the worst.
I would probably argue, how can it be legal? Because it's so long to read.
Yeah.
You know, crying out loud.
It's at least a 30-minute endeavor to get through some of these things.
That's just one paragraph.
I didn't say anyone understood it. But no. Yeah, this harkens back to the South Park episode where they didn't read the EULA. And we're not going to go into that. Just look it up if you want to.
Yeah, I will. I will. Fine. I'll go read that.
All right. Now, can I do a thank you to our wonderful patrons?
Please, by all means.
These are the people that support the show monetarily, even in a modest fashion. They bring this show because we love them. And in return, we give them special content that's only available to our patrons. No, it wasn't left blank intentionally, Craig. Craig is pointing out one cell is empty in the middle of this table. We did have a declination of funding from one person. Thank you for all your support over the years, longtime contributor. These are the people who are currently contributing. Kyle Nishioka, Mike Wills, Steve Therian, Saturday Morning Media. We know who that is. That's our good friend, Grant Pachoco.
Yep.
Chris MC, who's currently on tour with the MST3K live.
Yes.
And we will be seeing him Thursday night in some shape or form.
I get to see him in August.
Okay, yes. You have to wait. Ha ha.
Yeah. Don't spoil it for me.
It's the same movie every time. I mean, some cities do have a double showing of a different movie.
Well, there is a secret showing, and yes. I was just like, I don't know if I can sit around for 4 hours and watch. That's a lot, but so at least I'm seeing one of them.
Looking forward to seeing that. I'll give you a review next week. Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Ben Vaughn, Dennis Padnod, Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Leon, John Noble, and Kay Beaumont, our newest member. Thank you very much for your support. We greatly appreciate it. As I mentioned before, if you want to be part of this illustrious and elite group, go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And for as little as a dollar a show, remember, you only pay for when we provide. So if we have a lame-ass month, but like June Never. Was, where we had one show, hey, it's a dollar. You can't go wrong. And, you know, we're...
I know. Even though we're clearly worth two.
We're working on a special special gift for you this season. Last year, it was books. We sent everybody who wanted it books that we had available from various authors and distributors. So we'll get you something cool this year, too. Christmas present, if you will, for our patrons.
A signed book of the Podcasting for Dummies.
No, I can't afford that. That's if you want to buy it, I'll sign it.
Yeah,
I'll get you that. You know, pull a Scott Sigler thing. We will be doing, I don't know if I mentioned it on this show. There's a couple things to mention since we're deleting the Media Corner section anyway.
Yeah. Here it's back.
Speaking of Podcasting for Dummies, now you just have Media Corn.
All right. I'll take it.
Podcasting for Dummies. We will be doing a podcasting workshop October 28th in Phoenix, Arizona. If you're around, let me know. We are still finalizing the schedule, the venue. Don't have all the details, but that's the plan. T. Morris is going to be in town. We're going to do a book launch, a workshop with a couple of tracks going on. some past, present, and, well, who knows, maybe you'll be the future podcasters, and we will be doing book signings there as well. We will also be, the other thing to announce is Craig and Clinton Alvord and me.
What? Oh, yeah.
What?
That's
I,
right.
I? We already, we started a new podcast called The Topic is Trek. Over at thetopicistrek.com. We got a whole two episodes out, so it ain't polished yet.
I'm about to put I'm going to post the first one.
Okay.
We got to get in the next day or so.
We got to get in the various directories and whatnot.
But yeah, you can go check out the website. We're still putting it together. And we'll have a Facebook page up this week.
We need a promo too, apparently.
And a promo.
I'd roll and it in this. The show.
So this keeps going any longer.
Consider that our first promo. Well, yes, it's not impossible to start yet more podcasts. Well, Clinton's got an advantage. He's retired now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was just saying the other night. It was great having him on there because when I'm like, hey, Clinton, can you do this? He's got time to do it. It's like having an intern, just an older intern. No,
careful. You may not be on episode 2.
I love you, Clinton. Really, man.
All right. We have the Geek Library. Well, that was ruddy mysterious.
Ow. I wish you turned the volume down a little bit.
Did I resonate on you?
Yes, quite much so.
Scientists say tardigrades will be the last animals on Earth. And what are tardigrades, you may ask? They're those
little cows.
What?
They look like little cows.
No, they don't look like little cows. They have 6 legs.
No, look at the face. It looks like... Never mind, go ahead.
Anyway. Microscopic tardigrades have nothing to do with Doctor Who. They are also known as water bears. Huh. They are the toughest animals on the planet, capable of withstanding intense radiation, extreme temperatures, and even the vacuum of space. In a fascinating new study, researchers have shown that tardigrades are poised to survive literally anything that nature throws at them, and that the animals alive today, they'll be the ones standing before the sun annihilates the Earth billions of years from now.
I did the same thing. I had to cough, too. I was like...
At least I muted.
No, you didn't.
You hear me, but the recording doesn't. Ha ha.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Okay. The point of this cheery study published today in Scientific Reports was to determine the conditions under which all life on Earth might be extinguished, and the phenomena could instigate the premature sterilization of the planet. The word premature is key. The sun could sterilize the Earth in as few as 2 billion years and engulf it in about 5 to 7 billion years when it turns into a red giant. But that's not what this research team was interested in. It kind of reminds me of Alice's Restaurant. That's not what I came here to tell you about. Right. They wanted to know if something else might be capable of exterminating all the life on our planet. Such an exercise is not completely frivolous. The answer to this question could tell us about the resiliency of life and the extreme conditions under which it can survive. Or not survive. On Earth, Mars, the frigid subterranean waters of Europa, or some dark corner of the Milky Way. As Avi Loeb, we'll go with Lieb, it's L-O-E-B, an astronomer at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics and co-author of the new study told Gizmodo, I was curious about which astrophysical phenomenon can eradicate life. So this can guide us in which environments we should not search for life. First, Lieb and his colleagues had to answer the fundamental question, which animal on Earth is the toughest to kill? That animal, to virtually no one's surprise, is the freakishly durable tardigrade. This eight-legged wee beastie, 2, 4, 6. Well, maybe those 2 in back are little legs. Who knows? They look more like claspers. This eight-legged wee beastie, they measure 0.5 millimeter in length and can only be seen through a microscope, can endure conditions that boggle the imagination, surviving for up to 30 years without food or water and enduring temperature extremes of up to 300 degrees Fahrenheit, a.k.a. 150 degrees C. Tardigrades can withstand blasts of radiation, complete dehydration, being frozen, the vacuum of space, and even intense pressure found at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. it should come
pretty amazing.
As little surprise, therefore, that these animals, which emerged 350 million years ago during the Cambrian era, have managed to survive no less than five, count them, five mass extinctions. With the tardigrade chosen, Lieb's team then explored the various ways in which this creature could be completely wiped off the planet. Incredibly.
When they started killing them?
Well, there is a way. Incredibly, okay. They found that these ancient extremophiles will likely survive all natural calamities from asteroids to supernovae through to gamma ray bursts and wandering stars. Because
wait, don't shoot them with gamma rays.
None of these events are likely to trigger. What? Oh, the only thing that can truly destroy tardigrades, the boiling off of the world's oceans.
Right.
Yes, you read that right. It's only when the oceans boil away and the planet is as dry as a bone that the tardigrade family will meet its demise. It goes on from there, but it's a very interesting article about what these little animals are capable of and why are they interested in finding out how you can kill these little water bears?
You're asking?
No, I'm explaining.
You just read it to us.
I did.
Well, yeah, I was just, you said shooting them with gamma rays. I was like, don't do that.
Well, if an asteroid were to come along and blast into the Earth, here's the cool part. Some of these little guys are going to be on board of the rocks that blow off the Earth. And guess what? They're going to be on Europa. And they're going to be on...
traveling. They'll be space travelers.
They're going to be space travelers. And just like we have rocks from Mars, Mars is going to have rocks from Earth. And they're probably going to be infesting the place all over.
Wow. Pretty interesting.
They are. Tardigrades are neat. They're tough little animals. The more you learn about them, the cooler they are. And speaking of cooler...
Hey, by the way, I think the first time I saw these guys was on Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
You're a late bloomer.
What? No, I mean,
never heard of tardigrades?
No.
It was... Yeah, they were featured on there.
Yeah, he was talking about, I think that was the one where he's talking about the universe inside the water droplet.
Yes. When they went really small.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Read us our final story for the evening.
Why, yes. When I saw this picture, I was like, this is just too crazy.
That's what I saw, too. I was going through a feed on Facebook and went, oh, I have to follow through with this.
Yeah, so this alien punch fountain is the coolest party accessory ever. Okay. So it must be awesome to have the ability to build cool things because the sky truly is the limit. I wouldn't know. I'm reading this in the person perspective from
sure
the person.
Sure you are. Keep reading.
Yeah. I wouldn't know, but I can barely build a pizza. Many fans over the years have sculpted their own xenomorph busts and even life-size statues, but I'm pretty sure there's only one alien punch fountain in existence. Yes, you read that correctly. Alien punch fountain.
Looks like he's puking into the cups.
I know. Yeah, it's like his acid's coming out of his mouth. So the craftsman over on YouTube channel, Neat Oko, just uploaded a video where this particular build, which is out of this world awesome. They hand-sculpted the xenomorph from the waist up and inserted a tube into it, allowing them to literally use the monster as a dispenser for beverage of their choosing. They went with green Hawaiian punch, which is perfect since the xenomorph, well, they bleed green. So you can see the time lapse in the video that's attached to this article. I was just thinking, what if they took it a step further and made it a fondue fountain and had like chocolate and cheese and stuff like that?
Slowly dripping.
Yeah.
Like you just put the caramel on your top of your ice cream cone.
This would be great at a Halloween party.
This would be awesome at a Halloween party. They are up in Boulder City, Nevada, and I'm considering stopping next time we go to Vegas. It's on the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we should.
It's that little town just across the dam. Say you and I are going to go there next May. We might have to set something up.
Yeah. We should do something. That's pretty cool, though. Actually, it looks kind of neat, but there's no way Kim's letting me put that in a Halloween party or something in our house.
Let me give a quick glance over at Donna. Can we bring that to a party?
Special check.
Well, I'm still on the air. That's a good sign.
Castle barometer. There you go.
That brings us to the end of the show. We have a question of the week for you, though. We want to hear from you. Which fictional character, any, do you identify with and why? Could be from books.
Charlie Brown.
Wow.
I'm Charlie Brown.
Gee, the eternal optimist.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about the Charlie Brown cartoons. Remember the animated ones?
Yes, absolutely.
I was watching Star Trek, the original series today, and I watched, and the children shall lead, you know, where they summon up the glowy guy. The girl who plays Mary on there was the voice of Lucy on the Charlie Brown cartoons. Yes.
Okay. All right.
A little bit of trivia in case you didn't know it. Clinton would be going, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, since we recorded our podcast, you know, I noticed, well, I mean, almost all the Star Trek movies are on Hulu and Amazon.
Yes.
So I was like, I started watching, I wanted to watch, one of the TNG movies. I think I started with First Contact, just kind of threw it on and started watching
that
it
one right there on the poster in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. That one. So I started watching that. Then I moved on to, I started watching them all. And then I started going into the TOS crew, movies, and I think I almost watched almost all of the movies except for Nemesis and the newer stuff. And this
you
is over
didn't
the
watch
course of
Nemesis.
Last week. No. It wasn't available for me to watch.
It wasn't available
on the. I'd have to go pull out the DVD, and you know that's a lot of work.
Oh yeah, that's tough.
it's exhausting
when you have to go all the way to the cabinet to get a movie.
Well, here you go. Look, they're all right back down there. You can see them.
Yep.
So I started watching streaming them all over time. I kind of went backwards, I think, because I watched the motion picture today. You know, and I love that movie, but it sure is long.
You have to get the director's cut. It's much better.
I do have the director's cut, but again, it's in the cabinet.
I thought it was much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I did like it a little bit better, but it's in the cabinet.
All right. So which fictional character do you identify with and why? Anybody responding yet in the chat room?
John Miller says Clark Kent.
The kids would love it. Oh, it's Scott Tyler still talking about the Xenomorphs fountain.
Oh, he's got lag.
Rick Stringer joined. Tim Elliott joined. Rick probably joined to go, what am I getting myself into for next week?
Right.
Call us on the listener line if you've got an answer for the question, 707-530-2428, or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. I had to throw that out before.
I know we played the promo for it a little bit ago, but I want to remind everybody, hey, the Dog Days of Podcasting coming up August 1st. So if you want to listen to us podcast for once a day, not just us, but so far I've got, 13 people in there.
Oh, and it's probably going to grow from there. What did we have last year, about 24?
Yeah, probably about that.
DogDaysOfPodcasting.com. If you've got any questions, send Craig an email, craig@chuckchat.com.
It's on the website.
You can sign up right there.
Yeah, and I have a Facebook group. There's information on the website about signing up. So please, if you're interested in podcasting for once a day for the whole month.
It's a challenge.
For some people it's a challenge, some people it's not. But I think it's turning into the challenges, trying to listen to them all.
and you will hear some classic podcasters like Michael Butler. You will hear some people who are just starting out. We had a number of newcomers last year. I look forward to hearing from him again, like Charlotte Kennedy.
Yes.
So that should be fun. If you want to be on that list, hey, there's an easy way to do it. Plus, the Facebook group will help you get started. Even if you say, I've never done this before, you can just pick up your mobile device, talk into it, and hit a button, and you're pretty much done at that point. So it can't be any easier than that.
And I've mentioned this elsewhere, but part of the fun of this whole thing is just participating in it with everybody else. So there's a great group of people that are doing this, and it's just kind of fun, you know, hanging out with everybody and having the shared experience. It is a lot of fun.
Yep. It's a community. Yes. Okay. And on that note, we're going to sign out. Thank you very much, Craig.
Yo, thank you, Chuck.
Looking forward to talking to you again next week. Again, if you want to get a hold of us, call us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We look forward to hearing from you. or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Find us on the various social media sites. You know where to find us. Just look for Technorama Podcast. We are out there. Thank you again to all of our Patreon patrons. Go to patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. There it is on the screen. My wife is one step ahead of me. I should just learn to read. Follow her direction.
Look, always. She's always ahead of me.
Till next time, tell a friend about Technorama. And as always, Craig, give me a binary high five.
101. As long as prosper.
Thank you and good night.
Now go get your Game of Thrones on.